Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Every day I worry about you more.
I always appreciate the concern. And I got the package now. I'm fully stocked for Sunday night with the Votrin. Thank you.
I think I came up short. All right.
I'll just try to pace myself a little more. Because Dallas, I'm at another level when it comes to Dallas.
I got to get you through the playoffs, too. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street. Somebody go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, RV, boat, motorcycle, whatever it may be. Bundles. They'll do everything they can to save you money and make sure you're fully insured. They're the best in the business. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Snap, kick, hold. He got it. Murray is going to run them into position. Sliding. Let's check that spot if it's at a first down. A little bit short, so you spike it. Now you have to kick. And tie this up with 22 seconds remaining. It's up there. It's out there.
Unreal.
And it's no good in the direction he had trouble with before the game.
You, sir, are my hero.
And it's more than just Murray spiking it on third down. All right, you can talk about the scoreboard, said it was first down. Cliff Kingsbury has a direct mic into his helmet. Come on. Really? Oh, and by the way, John Harbaugh took the points. And guess what? At the end of the game, what did he need to win? A Justin Tucker field goal. Oh, it's amazing what happens when you take the points. It's not foolproof. But he took the points. Okay? Again, I'm all for going on fourth downs. I mean, really, I have no issue with that. But that it does come to a point where time, score, and possessions come in. Now your decision-making has to be more aware of that. And John Harbaugh did that last night. Doesn't mean it's going to work out. I mean, Tucker could have missed it. Yeah, sure. Tucker ain't going to miss it. And then there's your guy, Buck Showalter, who is a heck of a manager. He is. The Mets were in first place all but 6 days this season. Do you realize that?
Only six days
all season they weren't in first place.
14.5 game lead at one point.
And they end up not winning the division, going into the playoff. Get this, the visiting team won 3 of the 4 series.
Yep.
Everybody's talking about, oh, I get to play all 3 at home. That's really, what an advantage. All right. The only home team that won? Cleveland.
Yep.
They're it. Everybody else, all the other home teams, Toronto, Seattle beating them. Phillies won at St. Louis. And the Padres won in Citi Field against the Mets. And what Buck Showalter pulled last night, that was Bush League. I'm sorry, that's... Pitchers are checked after every inning. Every half inning, you see the umpire checking the pitcher. Now, they're up there, they're touching his face, they're touching his ears. And you got some knucklehead on Twitter, look, there's something shiny on his ear. It's like, I don't know, maybe it's called sweat. I mean, it's like, Twitter's just such a wasteland. And it's like people are like, Twitter's blowing up over, who cares? That's what cracks me up is people care so much about Twitter's blowing up over. So what?
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Unreal. Oh, well. Wild.
And apparently Game 3 wasn't even sold out last night at Citi Field. Did you see that?
39,000. At 39,000.
What an embarrassment.
Well, you're not going to be sold out. I mean, the Yankees have tickets available, you know. You do know that, right?
Yeah, and that's an embarrassment, too.
It's. I think it's more of an indictment of the baseball fan right now. It's not an embarrassment or whatever. It's more of an indictment of, you know, they're trying to fight to keep their audience during the football season. Not easy. But this is a golden opportunity. Maybe you should go to one of the games. What do you think?
I'd love to go. I just haven't had the time. But I'll be locked in at home. I just can't make it out there.
Robbie Thompson, 2-year deal. What Buck Showalter did last night was just, I'm sorry, it's wrong. What are you doing? Your problem is your team. It's not the guy pitching against you. And it's not like there's not a rule where they get checked every inning. They get checked every inning. Believe me, if he was leaving a substance on the ball, it would be on his hands. They check his hands. You know, so wherever he's, you know, they claim he's getting it from. And then there's the concussion rule in the NFL. The Jarrett play with Brady was called roughing the passer by Jerome Boger, who, by the way, is a very good official. And then there's Teddy Bridgewater, who was taken out of the game by the spotter upstairs, which the spotter upstairs, whomever he or she is entitled to do, that's their job. And he never came back. Right? Never came back. And I think it was the first play of the game. And they had to go with their third-string quarterback, Skylar Thompson, the kid out of Kansas State. And the Jets won big. I mean, let's give the Jets credit. But is this an overreaction to what happened to Tua? And Tony Dungy's exactly right. If you can't tackle the quarterback, it's going to be impossible to play defense. And Jack Hamm and I have talked about this. About how do you play defense these days? How do you tackle? That's why they talk about the tackling area from being the thighs up to midway the chest. But how often, for example, do you see a runner, a wide receiver, or running back, and it's a natural reaction? They're not doing it deliberately. It's like, okay, they get into that tuck position, which means they lower their head. When they're about to get hit, it's just a reaction. And they lower their head and they lower their helmet into the other guy's helmet. So I watch this yesterday. And the Brady thing just made no sense to me. I know that the Tampa Bay broadcast, they said, oh, he stepped on him. And you watch, he didn't step on him. Now, if you recall on the Tua injury, remember I talked about how he was flung to the ground? Tua was flung to the ground violently. And I thought he might get a personal foul penalty on the play because of how he flung him to the ground in his head, and he didn't. This wasn't that. Yeah, he threw Brady down, but he didn't do that. that was... You sense between seeing what they did with Bridgewater and then you see the call on the Brady play, and this is not about... This is not about Brady. I know it's easy. You know, I know you. You're sitting there going, it's Brady. Matt, calm down. Okay. To me, this is more about them overreacting to Tua.
100%.
Than it is that, as it just turned out, it was Brady. You're sitting there like, what's going on here? And I don't know what the deal was with Teddy Bridgewater, because nobody saw anything except obviously the spotter must have. But the people in the press box say they didn't see anything. The CBS replay says they didn't see anything. But he never did return. So I don't know. Maybe they went in there and he didn't pass the test.
From the one replay I saw, it looked like he did hit his head pretty hard there in the end zone.
This is when he was called for intentional grounding, I think. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. They're very sensitive about it.
But going back to Jared, though, when the hit with Brady, I'm going to go back to a phrase you often say, don't call what you don't see.
And I feel like that's what they did. I don't think there's the Brady play, there's nothing there. You know, somebody said to me, that cost the Falcons the game. It didn't cost the Falcons the game. Okay? You know, they would have punted and had the ball at the 15. They still needed a touchdown to win. I mean, you've got to take a little different look at it than that. I always love when I hear, it cost them the game. No, it doesn't. That's not okay. You're assuming they're going to drive downfield and get a touchdown. I'm assuming that I don't know what's going to happen.
And you should assume nothing with the Falcons this year, to be honest with you.
Well, I'll assume that about anybody. I wouldn't assume it about Tampa Bay. Say Tampa Bay was the team losing. I wouldn't assume that Brady would be able to drive them downfield right now and get it done. I wouldn't assume that. In the past, I might have, but not now.
True. I'm saying even more so with the Falcons. But, yeah, Brady, same thing.
You don't know. But what are they? What's this term they've added in now?
Oh, added in,
it begins with an A.
Yeah,
and I don't know what it means. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know what it means. I don't. So I kind of sat there and went, okay, what does that mean? It's a term I've got to look up as to why they pulled him out, as to what they're looking for. But yeah,
ataxia, ataxia.
Ataxia. So what is ataxia?
Going through the.
Because it's a term I've never heard before.
Specifically, the term ataxia, this is NFL.com,
has neurological been... sign consisting of lack of voluntary coordination of muscle movements.
Correct.
It says here.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, I could diagnose that. Okay, good. What are my odds of diagnosing that?
Or zero. Dysfunctional speech, yeah. I mean, basically, if it looks like Tua, that's what this term is now, I guess.
Yeah. We did get gotta go find it here, a question from Tom in Arizona. Casually following the play of Michigan this year, knowing that it would be a big game for Penn State, first three games were blowouts, Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, but I wasn't expecting the struggles it seems like they had against Maryland, Iowa, and Indiana. Don't get me wrong, they won, but is it wrong to think that the way Manny Diaz has the defense prepared right now, and a clean offensive game, they can go into the Big House and get a convincing win? What are your thoughts? Love the show. Matt's a basket case. Appreciate the time.
Well, I don't know. Oh, my almighty!
He didn't say that about you, by the way. I just ad-libbed that. just to make you angry. This is how I look at Michigan. Undefeated, really good, a lot of athletes. Getting Ronnie Bell back was a big deal for them at wide receiver. He's really helped. He's a physical guy that can make plays. Not the biggest guy in stature. He's only about 6 feet tall. But he'll block in the running game. Schoonmaker's played really well. All has not been playing as he's been out. Corum has had a terrific year, although Indiana, after the opening series where Corum broke off a 50-yard run, they controlled him the rest of the game. They sold out on the run, but they controlled him. McCarthy has played really well. He can move, so he can run. Their short passing game, short to slightly medium passing game, has been really good and really accurate. Their deep passing game has not been there. Their offensive line is good. Jones, the right tackle, is probably out of this game with a high ankle sprain, so Barnhart, the backup left tackle, is going to be flipped over to right tackle, and he'll play there. Defensive front, they'll rotate a lot of guys. They had a big game against Indiana with their defensive front. Colson, Junior Colson, the linebacker, is a really good player. 25, really good. Secondary, Mike Samer still, the former wideout that moved him over to DB, plays really, really well. Kicking game, Moody's actually missed a couple of kicks, which I would not have expected. They're really, really good. But so is Penn State. And I think this has a chance to be a really good football game on Saturday. So, I mean, that's my view of Michigan. Corum's really good. Edwards is a talented, good, solid backup that gives you 10 to 15 plays in the game. Corum's got that breakaway speed that you've got to keep control of. McCarthy can move in the pocket. All right. Cornelius Johnson is a good receiver. Bell I really like a lot. Ronnie Bell, good player. Roman Wilson did not play Saturday against Indiana, so I don't know what his status is for the game. Talked about their injury up front. Schoonmaker, the tight end, played really well. And then defensively, good front, gets pressure. They did it with four against Indiana, but they struggled with getting pressure in the Maryland game. And Iowa's got a great defense, so they can, they'll slow a lot of people down. So But what Michigan has done a really great job of is look at when they've scored. They score in their opening drive of the game, and a lot of times they score in the opening drive of the second half. So in other words, by scoring in that opening drive of the game, many times Michigan is then playing with the lead the rest of the game. So they haven't had to fight from behind. In Maryland, they had to come from behind. Right? Iowa, they were tied at the half. Indiana, they were tied at the half. But for the most part, by scoring on that opening drive, they put themselves in the lead and they played with the lead. And then they've done a good job of coming out of the locker room and scoring on their opening drive of the second half, too. Take good care of the ball. McCarthy's only thrown the one interception. That was against Indiana Saturday in the end zone. So they've been careful with it. And that's who they are. And I hope that answers his question. All right. But this will be the best secondary they've faced. No question. All right, we'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment. Got a note from Araldis Chapman. Wow. He said, after all the nice things I've said about Matt, why does he treat me this way? How do I answer a heartfelt letter like that?
No, senor!
After everything Chapman's done for you, everything. All right. Come back with more. He's not on the postseason. He will not be on the postseason roster. In fact, he'll never be a Yankee again.
Good.
Safe to say. Oh, you just... I mean, come on. Why don't you sign DeGrom? He's good for four innings. We'll come back with more in a moment. I always love when I hear, DeGrom's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I'm like, yeah, you got to pitch. You got to go out and the guy take the ball. Can't throw 66 pitches. I'm done in a playoff game. That's not a Hall of Famer. Give me a break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, best in new inventory. Auto, home, life, business, and don't forget, they do a great job with bundles saving you money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Joined by Dave Cicchini, head football coach at Bucknell. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Look, experienced team, lots of older guys. As you're watching just the first quarter, did you feel like you were running into a buzzsaw on Saturday?
Oh, no doubt. You know, the game did not open up the way that we wanted to. Coleman Bennett gets injured on the first play from scrimmage, and that was tough. Really had to do some adjustment to our game plan. But, I mean, hats off to just a super veteran Holy Cross team. I mean, they showed up and they were as advertised, and they played very, very good football. This is a really, really good football team that we went up against on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, they're the three-time defending champs in the conference. Danny, though, stepped in. He still got you 73 yards on 14 carries. What did you think of his performance?
Oh, I love Danny. I mean, he is a great guy. He's done a spectacular job on special teams for us. All year, he is a downhill running style, and you know, he's just fighting for playing time. You know, running back is our deepest position, but as soon as Coleman went down, and we made some adjustments game plan wise, Danny stepped up and played a really big role throughout the day, and that's nice. You know, we're still not as deep as we'd like to be at certain positions, but running back, we're very, very happy with where we're at, and Danny really, really made some nice plays. And doesn't quit. He just plays with a physical mentality, whether it is, you know, taking a handoff or running down on a kickoff.
At this point, you know, and you've got Yale coming up this week, you got to go to the Yale Bowl. Are you privately concerned about confidence at all? Because you're looking for something to tell these guys that, you know, I like this, I like this, I like this. And there's certain things you can do that with, but are you concerned about confidence?
Yeah, you know, it's something that we talk about a lot. The frustration level is high. Our kids have been playing hard. They've given such great effort. We try to put things into perspective. You know, the first thing we talked about is, you know, we feel like we are a more veteran team, and we are. We're a more veteran team than we were a year ago. And you and I have talked with the addition of the free COVID year that the NCAA has granted for eligibility. You know, you feel like you're more experienced because you are, but the teams you're going up against, you know, I think Holy Cross is a great example. You know, loaded not just with seniors, but with fifth-year seniors. They had 15 returning players for their fifth year of eligibility, and they had 23 seniors in their fourth year of eligibility. So that's a high number. We're competing. We're going out there, and we've got a lot of guys who – you know, played a lot as freshmen and are now sophomores, or played a lot as sophomores and are now juniors. Our senior class is still very small. We've only got 11 seniors on the team, and we have 0 fifth-year players. So when you look at kind of putting yourself that far behind when it comes in the experience game. And it wasn't that way when we played Lafayette. You know, there are teams that are more like us in the Patriot League, but clearly, you know, Holy Cross is the most veteran team with the most amount of fifth-year players and fourth-year seniors. All my years coaching in the Patriot League and the Ivy League, it's usually those teams that have the biggest and best senior class, that are going to be your eventual champions. And right now, you know, Holy Cross certainly is in the driver's seat for the Patriot League Championship.
Is it tough for Bucknell to get any fifth-year guys because of the way the academic rigors are at the university? And that's not an excuse. Bucknell is a great university. That's why it is what it is. But is it tougher to have fifth-year guys?
A little bit tougher, yes. I mean, one of our big selling points is our education and our graduation rate, which is top 10 in the country. Our guys graduate, and they graduate in 4 years. That leads to certain situations where we do have players that graduate and they have additional years of eligibility. Brandon Benson's playing at Eastern Michigan. We have players that have gone on,
yes,
and transferred. It's similar. Ivy League schools kind of have a lot the same, where players graduate in 4 years and have an extra year to compete, and in many cases, you know, get their graduate schooling paid for. But that's just not something that Bucknell does. We don't have a large graduate program, and so that is a challenge that we have. It is certainly not an excuse. It's something that we're looking for. We're going to have some fifth-year guys, not many. We'll never get close to 15, but we've got some good football players. We have big, very large classes that our coaching staff has recruited, that our junior class, our sophomore class, they're really large classes. Our freshman class is fairly large as well. So the depth is coming. The experience is growing. It takes patience for guys to just keep plugging away, keep finding ways to get better, and eventually we'll get those wins.
And then there's the other part. With a smaller senior class, and you have a small senior class numbers-wise, does that affect at all the depth of leadership that you have in the locker room? Or is that something that can permeate to juniors, sophomores, and so forth?
Well, it certainly puts pressure on the junior class to make up for that void of just, you know, 11 guys. A lot of them are outstanding leaders. But, when you have a team of 90 players, even if 9 or 10 of those guys are really good leaders, that's still, you're looking at about 10%. You know, you need to have more leaders on your team. We have a lot of young players who kind of have picked up that burden and done a great job, you know, first by leading with their actions and then with their words. Ethan Pitzel, who's our best offensive lineman right now, is a junior captain elected by his peers and has done a phenomenal job. So there are others. They are picking up the slack, and they're learning. And again, that's going to pay off when it is our turn, you know, which isn't far away, where we will be the team that has the most experienced players, the most returning starters. So every game moving forward, if it's not going to be for your Patriot League Championship this year, it's going to be to win as many football games as we can win to reach the full potential of our football team this fall and have it pay off for 90-some percent of our team that's going to be back for next year's season.
We always talk about the process. How tough is it living through the process sometimes, Dave?
Without a doubt, there are tough days. You know, and you have to look long term. You have to look at the little tangible signs that you're getting better, and you got to get your team to focus on those things as well. When you go through tough games, it also exposes what is not working for you, and that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It enables you to not gloss over certain things that you did wrong and that people kind of minimize because, well, hey, we still won the football game. Yeah, we got a punt block, but we still won a football game. Yeah, we did this wrong, we did that wrong, but we still won. And when you're, you know, not winning those games, it does give you, you know, kind of more of a, hey, this is really, really important. This is one of the reasons why we lost this game. We've got to get this fixed so that we can become the best team that we can be.
Yale's 3-1. They're coming off a win over Dartmouth, and Dartmouth's a good football team. The schedule, I mean, it is what it is, but I don't feel like it's giving you any breaks here, Dave, because you got to step up in competition.
Yeah, we certainly have had a challenging start to our season. You know, we've had a couple of games that we've been in and a couple of games where I think we've really overachieved to stay in. But if we can keep going, keep our nose to the grindstone, keep going through that process, as you referred to, our team will get better. Our opponents, as I mentioned, are going to be more like us in terms of their depth and in terms of their age and experience. Some of those games are around the corner. Yale is not one of those teams. They are very talented. They're a team that's undefeated in the Ivy League. They're playing with a lot of confidence. Now, they ran into the Holy Cross buzzsaw to start their season, and they got whooped pretty bad. Not quite as bad as we did, but almost as bad. But they have done a really good job of becoming a better team over the past couple of weeks. So their confidence is I'm sure, very high, and it's going to be a big challenge for us on Saturday in the Yale Bowl.
Dave, best of luck. Keep grinding in the process, okay?
Absolutely. We will. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks, Dave. All right. Dave Cicchini. We'll come back a little bit on expansion. There's always stories about expansion. We'll get into that. So as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
The weather is getting cooler and the leaves are changing in central PA. Hi, this is Season from Purdy Insurance. If your current agent is falling short, it's time to give Purdy Insurance a call. We're a local, family-owned independent agency ready to find the right insurance to fit your needs. You can call us at 570-286-5855, stop in our office on Market Street in Sunbury, or head to our website at purdyinsurance.com to find out what we can do for you.
Big push to get a sack that would end it. King lobs it. End zone. Intercepted. It's ball game. Alabama will win. Wait a minute. We got a flag down.
Pass interference on the defense.
There's the jersey held by Brian Branch. Set for the Aggies. King to throw for it to the corner. Incomplete. Alabama survives at home.
Brad Nessel with the call. That would not have, I don't think it would have been a touchdown if he caught it. To be honest with you, if he caught it, I don't think it was going to be a touchdown.
Brilliant play call by Jimbo Fisher.
Now, on the interference, it's one thing you notice about Alabama, and it also dovetails over to Georgia as well. Because you know, Kirby coached at Alabama as a defensive coordinator. You'll know they're both very handsy in the secondary. Very handsy. And they got caught. I mean, they got caught, you know, being handsy. But that is always, that has been their MO in the secondary. Most of the time they get away with it. Not there. You know, you're trying to win a game. You got to, you know, they lost. Oh, my goodness. At least two to three minutes on the clock because a guy jogged off the field on a punt. They had 12 guys on the field. Sprint. Didn't do it. Ugh. Oh, well. Ah. The losing teams make losing plays. So very quickly, a lot of people are talking about expansion. Couple notes. The 30-day exclusive negotiating period between the Pac-12 and ESPN and Fox expired. That is not a surprise because eight to nine times out of ten, those things expire because they'd like to see if there's some bidding for what's going on out there. The Pac-12 gets about $250 million a year. The Pac-12 allegedly wanted 450 to 500 million a year. Now remember, ESPN was talking to the Big Ten, and the Big Ten said, "Hey, look, we have a package available. I think it was the 330 package. I think." And they said, "Are you willing to go 380?" And ESPN said no, and it went to CBS for 350. But they asked, "Are you willing to go 380 for that?" ESPN said no. Sterling within their rights. If they're going to say no to the Big Ten at 380, you think they're going to give 450 to 500 million to the Pac-12? I mean, I know you're looking for an increase, but that was delusional. But reportedly, that's what they were looking for. They were looking for 450 to 500 million a year, and ESPN's like, "I'm not going to do that." And so now they're going to open it up. The question is, what are they going to get on bids when they open it up? There's also another element to this that just is not discussed enough. And I've talked over and over again about if somebody comes to the table and they can bring $80 million per year in value, the Big Ten should jump on them. No question. If they can't, you don't. It's simple math. And there is one other element to this, and I just don't think there's anybody that does that. That's my issue with expansion. You know, because, look, I'm for expanding the college football playoff. I definitely want 12. Fine with me if it's 16. I wanted expansion with USC and UCLA. So believe me, I'm not somebody who doesn't, no. But there's also, you have to be smart about what you're doing. USC and UCLA are smart. I'm not so sure the others are so smart. To me, the only big chip left in the game is Notre Dame. I've said that over and over again. And who knows what's going to happen there with Notre Dame. I think their contract goes through 2025 with NBC. And Notre Dame does have a scheduling problem. They do. They've got the five ACC games, which doesn't light up anybody. They get the game with USC, which does. But, like, the rest of their schedule's populated with Toledo, Marshall, BYU, which was a nice game. But, I mean, did anybody watch it the other night? Did you watch it? I watched Texas A&M and Alabama. I mean, I don't know if you watched it. I mean, you're a big Notre Dame fan. I don't know if you watched it at all.
Oh, I did.
Why?
Because I haven't really had a chance to watch a whole lot of Notre Dame football this year. That's the simple answer I can give you.
Okay. But there's another element when it comes to the Big Ten and expansion. Whatever they do has to be approved by the presidents and chancellors. That's who Kevin Warren works for. He works for the chancellors and presidents of the Big Ten. So they do have final say as to what they're going to do. And there is part of a burden that is there where you're sitting there and saying, well, wait, if we do this, and it would probably wreck a conference. Do we want to do that? Maybe they do. I don't know. I've never been in. The only presidents I know have always been the ones that were at Penn State. I don't know the other ones. I've never been in a president's room. For one thing, I'd come up a little bit short in terms of acumen. These are all doctors and so forth. I'm looking around going, okay, I go to a doctor sometimes, a wellness visit. How they operate, what they think, in the end, they would have the final say, yay or nay, if they wanted to do something with this. And it's an element that has to be brought in here that if it does get that far, they're the ones that are going to have to give the thumbs up, thumbs down. And I think they need... I want to say they would need 8 votes to do it. It might be more than that. Because everything's been unanimous. Penn State was 7-3 and they needed seven. So they needed to, so they essentially needed two thirds. And Penn State was 7-3 in 1990. So I think they might need two thirds. If it was 6-4, they wouldn't have made it. So I guess you need two thirds. So they would need nine yes votes out of 14. Right? That would do it, right? Yeah. So they'd need nine yes votes. My question is, would you have it? Would you have it? Because the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to dilute the number you already have as the share everybody's getting. So let's take Rutgers and Maryland, for example. They're not fully vested till 2027. Would they want to vote yes on something where it means they won't be fully vested until 2029? See, there's a lot that goes into this that a lot of people are not taking into consideration. I mean, do you want to be involved in it? Say they go with an Amazon package. If you're Rutgers or Maryland and Purdue, how hepped up are you to be on Amazon Prime as opposed to NBC or CBS or BTN even? Maybe you think it's the wave of the future, so you'd be excited about it. I don't know. But there's a lot of questions here. And I still maintain the Pac-10 stays intact. And they are looking for a five-year TV deal. Here's the interesting part about that. That five-year, if they were to go 5 years in the Pac-12, it would run out the same year as the Big Ten's does. Huh.